Isaiah chapter 52, reading at verse 7. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news, who publishes peace, who brings good news of happiness, who publishes salvation, who says to Zion, your God reigns. The voice of your watchmen, they lift up their voice. Together they sing for joy, for eye to eye they see the return of the Lord to Zion. Break forth together into singing, you waste places of Jerusalem, for the Lord has comforted his people. He has redeemed Jerusalem. The Lord has bared his holy arm before the eyes of all the nations, and all the ends of the earth shall see the salvation of our God. Now in the Gospel of John, John 1 at verse 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. Well, as we've already noted, this is the beginning of the new year in the church. This is the beginning of Advent. In the church, we celebrate what's called the church year or the calendar year that focuses on the life of Christ. This comes from very early on in the church's history. And the reason we do this is because our life is centered on Christ. And so as we focus on his coming, his birth, his revealing, his death and his resurrection and his work in the world, we are centering our lives around Christ, who is our life. Our life is in him and his life is in us. And we begin that each year at Advent as we look forward to his coming, which we celebrate in Christmas. And we're going to be considering these themes of Advent over the next 4 weeks in the morning services and the evening services as we move toward Christmas. We begin this morning by looking at this passage in John chapter 1. Now, John is different from all of the other Gospels, just to give you a little bit of orientation here. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are what we call the Synoptic Gospels, and they follow pretty much a chronological accounting of the life of Christ. The whole life of Christ. John's a little bit different. The Gospel of John was written much later, after John was at the end of his life. He was over 80 years old, so he had a lot of time to think about the life of Christ. And so he doesn't try to include everything or try to give us an expansive or cataloged life of Christ. He is focusing on the theology of Christ. And he wants us to grasp some very, very important things about who Christ is. And this morning, we're going to look at this very important, foundational, paradigm-shifting passage, at the beginning of this gospel in John 1. John begins right out of the gate in this gospel by giving us some very, very deep and hard-to-understand truths. So I'm going to ask you to work this morning. Okay, I don't know if you came ready to work, but we're going to work. We're going to have to think deeply. Excuse me. There we go. Think deeply and grasp deeply these truths that John is trying to get across to us. These are, we were made for deep things. We were made to grasp deep truths, and John gives us some very, very deep truths to grasp this morning. So we're going to try to do that by God's grace, to find out what he wants us to grasp about the incarnation of Christ. And I want us to focus on these four things that I think are in this passage. Number one, he's with you, he is in you, he is for you, and he is showing you. He's with you, he's in you, he is for you, and he is showing you. He is revealing to you. So the first thing that John wants us to grasp is this, that he is with you. He is with us. Look at what he says in verse 4 and verse 5. He says, in him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. And then down in verse 14, the word became flesh and dwelt among us. He dwelt among us. This passage is about what we call in theology the incarnation. You've heard that word, I know. But what does it mean? What does it mean? What do we mean by the word incarnation? Big theological word that we use all the time. Well, incarnation comes from the Latin words, two root words, in, which means in. You awake? And caro, which means flesh. So he was enfleshed. Christ was enfleshed. He was embodied. The Spirit took the form of a flesh. Okay? The Spirit became fleshly. He took the form of the flesh of something. God, let this sink in, God came into our world. God came into our world. Our God centers himself in the midst of his creation. God came down. We were made for this presence. Right at the very beginning in Genesis, we're told God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness. So God created man in his own image. In the likeness of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Intrinsic to what it means to be made in the image of God or to be in God's likeness is that we bear his image. We were made for communion with him. We didn't want that. We walked away from that. And that's our fault. We resist the idea of there even being a God and living under his authority. And so we broke that communion. We walked away. We broke it. That's really important for us to grasp. We did it. Okay, we did it. We broke our relationship with God. We broke ourselves. We broke the world. We pushed that first domino. And this long, kids may not even know what domino chains are, but we pushed the first domino down. And we broke it all. God gave us a beautiful, wonderful place, and we broke it. It's a mess. And it's our mess. We own it. We have no one else to blame but ourselves. God is not responsible for this. We are. And we can't fix it. There's nothing we can do. No amount of work or study or effort can fix it. Help had to come. And what John is saying here is that help came. It did come. And it had to come from the outside. It couldn't come from us. We couldn't build it. We couldn't manufacture it. Even if we all pulled all of our resources together and just sent one person out, the best that we had, it's not good enough. It had to be what F.B. Meyer called an exotic. He said this, forgiveness is an exotic which Christ brought with him forever. I love that word exotic because Christ is an exotic. Webster says an exotic is something introduced from another country, not native to the place where it is found. And Jesus Christ is an exotic. He came from another place. We needed the holy to penetrate into the broken. This is why the church father Athanasius says, we became by grace what God is by nature. It had to be this way. It had to be this way, I believe. There was no other way we could get home. Christ had to come. God had to come down. There is a debate among theologians on this point. Was there no other way for us to go home, for us to be saved, for us to get back to God? Did it have to be this way? Did Christ have to come? Did Christ have to die? Was there no other way for this to happen? The answer is, I think, yes, it had to be this way. Jesus had to come. There is no other way. He had to die. He had to rise again. The reason I think so is because this is what I think Jesus himself said to us in the garden, in the Gethsemane. Remember those words? He said, "If it's possible, Father, let this cup pass." A second time he said, "Father, if it cannot pass unless I drink it." And then a third time we're told he pleaded with his Father, "If there's any other way for them to go home." Three times he implored the Father. If there had been any other way, I believe the Father would have allowed it. Do you see this, though? What it means is he did come, that he didn't give up. He could have walked away, but he didn't. We broke it. He could have walked, but God didn't give up. God didn't give up on you, and he didn't give up on me. And that changes everything. In 2006, Tim Russert, I don't know if you remember the journalist Tim Russert, but he had a panel of guests on Meet the Press to discuss religion. Included in this panel were John Meacham, the author, Joel Osteen, and Richard John Newhouse. At the end of the program, he asked them each to, in 20 seconds, give their prayer for the American people. And I was struck by what Richard John Newhouse said. He said this, "My prayer is that all the people would come to know Jesus Christ as crucified and risen and find therein the deepest grounding, because here is the incarnation of God himself, and humanity will not fail because God has faced up to everything that threatens it and has prevailed." Let me read that again. "Humanity will not fail because God has faced up to everything that threatens it and has prevailed." God didn't give up. What this means, what does this mean for you? Well, it means that he is here. He's in this world. He's in this place. He's in this room. He's with you. He's not given up on you. You may have given up on you, but God has not. Others may have given up on you, but God has not. You may have given up on others, but God has not given up on them. The world may have given up on you, and you may have given up on the world, but God has not. And this is why, for Christians, we say despair is criminal, and optimism must win. It must win. We cannot give in to despair. We cannot give in to darkness. We cannot give in to pessimism, because God is here and he has not given up. There are some here this morning, I know, who are listening, who fight against the very real enemies of darkness and depression and anxiety in a more severe way than others, and who will definitely go through times when they're ready to give up. And I want you to listen to me. Listen to the truth. He's with you. And that changes everything. Because his presence and his power are the same thing. If he is here, his power is here. If he is here, then all of his resources are here. His presence and his power are the same thing. With God, all things are possible. Sin will not win. Satan will not win. You are safe because God is here. You are safe if God is with you. This is why John says here, "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness does not overcome it." Now, that is not a hope. That is not wishful thinking. That is a fact. This is a certainty, because his presence and his power are one. Some of you may have heard me tell stories about my grandmother who had a big impact on me in many ways, but her Christian faith was one of the main ways that she impacted me. I spent a lot of time with her, and she loved to tell the story about when I was about 4 years old. I really wanted a pair of blue jeans because apparently we were shopping at Hand Trading Company in Pelham, Georgia. And we get up to the cash register, and I think I must have only had a quarter because I called her Granny. I said, "Granny, can you buy a pair of blue jeans with a quarter?" And she said, "You can if your granny's with you." His presence and his power are one. If he's here, all things are possible. Is there hope? Yes, if Jesus is with you. Despair is close to a heresy because it suggests that sin wins. That God made something good, but that sin and evil successfully destroyed it. And what Jesus' incarnation demonstrates is that sin and death do not win. God seeks us. He is relentlessly seeking us, and he finds us. He touches us. He heals us. He is with you. And secondly, it gets better. He's in you. He's not just with you. He's in you. Verse 12 says, "But to all who did receive him, take him in, who accepted him, who brought him inside, he is there." But he says, to all, verse 12, who took him in, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Jesus didn't just come to incarnate the world. He came to incarnate us. We must receive him. And when we do, he does not just dwell in the world in a general way. He dwells in each one of us in a very specific way. He dwells in each one of us individually. And when he does, the general power of Jesus Christ becomes specifically applicable to each one of us. You get that? So the general power of Christ, when we receive him and take him in, the general becomes specific. It's like taking medicine. You know, it's like children say, Mommy and Daddy, how do I know when I take the aspirin, how does the medicine know where to go? The general becomes specific. The general finds the places that need healing. The general becomes specific. When we receive Christ, he sends to us his own spirit, and we receive, and we are infilled with the Holy Spirit of God. And this spirit goes into all of us, every facet. It reaches all the parts of our personality that God had in mind when he created you, and he breathes life into that. He brings it back. And this is a literal indwelling. Jesus Christ himself, the personal Christ, the risen Christ, the ascended Christ, is not just on the outside of you, with you. He is living within you. He comes in and he lives there. And he doesn't just come in as a guest. He dwells there. He lives in the very center of who we are. And he makes all of it holy. You know, he is not harmed by sin. Okay, he's not affected by it because he's holy. He won. He came through the temptation. And when he came through the temptation, he demonstrated his mastery over sin. So our sin doesn't hurt him. Our brokenness doesn't hurt him. He is our healer, and he has come into us, and he has already accomplished all that's necessary to heal us and to restore us. And he has already poured out that full gift of his spirit on us. He is 100% available to us right now. There's not some future time. It's not like in a year from now, more of Christ is going to be available to you than he is right now. All of him is available right now. This is the mystery that Christ is in us, this Christian union with God. And this is different from every other religion. We're not saying that we become God, but Christ, the God-man, does indwell us so that he can make us holy, so that he can take us home. And this model of Christianity and Christian union is different from all other models. The secret is Christ himself. There's no other way. There's no other way. You are in God. by Jesus Christ. I think this is so important for us to get because so many of us have been offered, the world has offered, and the church, unfortunately, has offered a very impoverished, very watered down view of what Christianity is, that it's a set of rules, that it's belonging to a club or a part of a society or doing some things or wearing some clothes or doing some service projects. No, that's not what Christianity is. Christianity is that God came down and that when we receive him by faith, he comes in and he indwells us. Each Christian has to do that, has to open the door of our hearts and to let him in. We must do that. We do that by his grace, but we must do it. And it's his life that comes in and lives within us. He is with us. He is with us. Third, he is for us. He is for you. Verses 1 to 4, and this is a little bit harder to see, but if you look at verses 1 to 4, this very difficult passage to even grasp why John is even telling us this, he says this: "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made." Now, why does John talk about the beginning? Why does he even bring up this creation language? Because every one of us, when we read that word, those first three words, in the beginning, our minds go back to creation, right? In the beginning. Well, I think because John wants us to realize that when Jesus came down, the new creation started. The shot clock was restarted. Everything started over when Jesus came down. And when we receive him, we're receiving someone who literally makes all things new. And so when we receive him in us, what he's saying is you're bringing within you the one that has the power to make you new, to start you over, to heal you and to restore you to what you were supposed to be, what creation intended. The one in you, another way to say it, the one in you has creative power. I mentioned to you this to you before, but God has the power of what we call in theology aseity, the power to call things into being, to make things exist that don't exist, that didn't exist. That's why when he says, "Let there be light," there's light. When he says, "You know, let there be a tree," there's a tree. Things come into being. You and I don't have that power. This is the power to make things exist. And what he can say to in your life is that something that wasn't there before, that courage, that strength, that power, that love for somebody, that forgiveness that you don't think you can muster, he can grant that. He can make the fruits of the Spirit come to life in you. He can bring life where there was no life before. He has the power of being. This is why Paul says in Colossians 1, "He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether the thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities." Why is he telling us this? Why does it matter that Jesus is the firstborn of creation? Because if the one that is with you and the one that is in you is also the firstborn of creation, he can make anything happen. He can make anything happen. The one who lives in you is able to make anything exist in you. He calls into being with his voice that which did not exist. He has creative power. And he brings this creative power to bear in your life through his word. He calls it up. He calls it out. That's why he says he's the Word. In the beginning was the Word. How does he bring about, how does God create at the very beginning in Genesis 1? He speaks. How does Jesus call into new life things in you that didn't exist? He speaks to you. He talks. That's why it's so important that we listen. We listen. We are the barren, unfertile ground of God's new creation. And the firstborn of creation comes in and says, "I'm going to plant a wonderful garden here, a beautiful thing. Things are going to live." This is why he says in Hebrews, while we read in Hebrews 1, verses 2, long ago, at many times and in many ways, God spoke to our fathers by the prophets. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed the heir of all things, through whom he also created the world. He is the radiance of the glory of God and the exact imprint of his nature, and he upholds the universe. The one that is in you is the firstborn of creation. And he has creative power, and he speaks, and this one, when he speaks, brings life to you. He begins this work of recreating through you. And what happens? You begin to live. I begin to live. The word life that is used here in this passage in John is not biological life. It's not chronological life. It's the word zoe in Greek, which means fulfilled life. It's very similar concept to the word in Hebrew, shalom. It's peace, it's wholeness, it's fullness, it's completeness. It's you as you were meant to be. You begin, he brings you life. This is why Jesus said, I came that they may have life and might have it abundantly. You see, there are two yous and there are two me's. There are two yous and there are two me's. There's the you that God created you to be. And there's the you that sin broke and sin disfigured. And Jesus came to restore that you of creation, to get it back. He wants you to be you. He wants you to be who he created you to be. This is the power of the word. This is the power of Christ's word. He is with you. He's within you. He is, what was the third one? Forgotten. He is for you. And lastly, he is showing you. He is showing you. I struggled with this last fourth word because I couldn't really find a word that does justice to this concept in verse 14. But in verse 14, we read this. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory. Glory as the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. John ends by saying this one that has come, the one who is with us, the one who is within us, the one who is for us, is also showing us. He's revealing something to us. And what he's revealing to us is his glory. Now, why does he do that? Is he just showing off? Is he just wanting us to see how glorious he really is? Is he doing it just so that we'll worship him? No, I don't think those are the reasons. What is glory? We need to understand this before we can answer that question. What is glory? Glory is simply the splendor of God revealed. And Jesus' glory is that he was this perfect man, this glorious man as he was supposed to be, humanity as it was supposed to be. And he was glorious. And what he's saying here is that it's so important for us to gaze at that glory. Why? Because as we gaze at the glory of Christ, as we gaze at humanity as it's supposed to be, we are transformed into what we are gazing at. We are transformed into that glory. This is why Paul says in 2 Corinthians 3, verses 8, we all, with unveiled face, beholding the glory of God, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another. Jesus Christ comes and reveals his glory. And what we see in 2 Corinthians 3, 8 is this truth, that transformation comes through this communication. The word is spoken to us, and as we dialogue with him, as we communicate with him, as we live in relationship with this glorious Jesus Christ, we are transformed into his glory. Now, that doesn't mean our personality changes. It doesn't mean that we lose who we are. But we become the glorious ones. We actually become glorious like Jesus was glorious. This is why Paul says in Colossians 1, to them God chose to make known how great among the Gentiles are the riches of the glory of this mystery, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. Did you know that you are made for glory? You are made to be glorious. You are made for something much more than what you are right now. There's glory to be revealed in you. Romans 8:20 says this, for the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope, that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. Not the glory of the creation, but there is coming a day when creation will be set free because you're going to be made complete in your glory. You are going to be fully realized in your glory. What is the glory of the children of God? Your glory is you as you were meant to be. You as God intended. And that comes as you dwell in the presence of God, as you walk in the presence of Jesus Christ. What he does is he calls you up. He calls you up to more. He calls me up to more. And he is especially calling us up in the ways that we most need it. We're most broken. He's especially calling us up in the ways that we write ourselves off. Some people really want to water Christianity down to be a simple list of rules and a club. And I'm telling you, you were not made for simplicity. You were made for greatness. You were made for glory. You were made for the sublime. You were made for the deep. You were made for greatness. And the world needs your greatness. The world needs you to be the glorious one that he created you to be. Because he has a plan for how he's going to love the world through you. And we reach that as we look at him. It is a theological truth that we become what we focus on. That's our nature. That's who we are. And as we look and dwell in the presence and the glory of Christ, he is formed in us. And all of our uniqueness, all of our glory is brought back, redeemed, restored. Sometimes we don't even think that's possible. We say, well, I'm too far gone, or I'm too old. No. Whatever that coldness, whatever that weakness is, that's our need for healing. And Jesus Christ is able. He is here and he is able and he is willing. All we have to do is say yes. All we have to do is listen and say yes, because he's right here and he's waiting for us. Do you realize that he's right here? He's right here. In his best-selling book, Into Thin Air, John Krakauer tells the story of the dangers that plagued some climbers as they attempted to reach the summit of Mount Everest. There was one climber named Andy Harris, and he was one of the leaders of the expeditions, and he stayed at the peak too long, and on his descent, he was in dire need of oxygen. So he radioed down to the base camp and told them about his predicament. He mentioned that he had come across this cache of oxygen canisters left by the other canisters, but they were all empty. Well, the other climbers who had already gotten down, they passed the canisters on their way, and they knew that the canisters were not empty. They were full. And they tried to reason with him. They tried to tell him. They pleaded with him on the radio to take the canisters, but to no avail. He had it in his mind that canisters were empty. The problem was that the lack of what he needed had so disoriented his mind that he was surrounded by something that would give him life, but he couldn't see it. He was surrounded by life, but he continued to complain that he was dying. What he needed was right there. Friends, Jesus Christ is life, and He is light. All we have to do is say yes and open the doors and let Him come in, and the light will not be overcome by the darkness. Let's pray. Father, we praise You and we thank You that You did not give up on us, that You sent Jesus Christ as an exotic, the light which came into the dark world, into our dark lives. Forgive us, Father, for where we have despaired even of ourselves and our situations. Thank You that You are here, that You are with us, that You are within us, that You are for us, and that You are showing us Your glory, that we might be transformed into Your glory. We make our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.